South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, July 1st, 2022. 10 Sudanese protesters were killed during anti-coup marches in Khartoum yesterday.
Another hospital in Bahrain, number of injuries.
And authorities in South Sudan's Warab state say 30 people were killed by armed assailants from neighboring Unity State on Wednesday.
The armed youth from Unity State, particularly from Mayom County, attacked the area of Abakwakayan, Toynor County, Warab State. The attack led to the killing of over 30 people, including women and children.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, today began the first leg of his trip to the Democratic Republic of Congo in South Sudan to represent Pope Francis. The Pope canceled his trip to Africa for medical reasons. The Vatican News quotes the Cardinal as saying at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, "It is an important trip. I feel truly honored to be able to go to both the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan to bring to those peoples the Pope's affection, together with the assurance that as soon as conditions permit, especially from the point of view of health, he himself will make this trip." Parolin is scheduled to return to the Vatican on July the 8th. The Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors says at least 10 protesters were shot and killed in the capital Khartoum yesterday when huge crowds took to the streets amid heavy security presence in a communications blackout. Medics say more than 500 others were injured. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Dr. Abdulrahim Ali Dobora, a member of the Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors, says 9 protesters were killed on Thursday, while another protester succumbed to his injuries this morning in a hospital in Khartoum. Dr. Dobora says security forces fired live bullets at the protesters.
Here we lost one, which is the direct gunshot to his head. And we have 200 injured. Variation in danger from minor to moderate and severe, and unfortunately two of them lost their eye.
Security forces also fired tear gas and water cannon on pro-democracy protesters in central Khartoum, Omdurman, Khartoum North, and other cities across the country. The government cut off internet service and telephone communication before the protests began on Thursday. Dr. Dobora says, despite limited access to the internet, preliminary reports from the field indicate at least 500 protesters were wounded in Khartoum alone.
Another hospital in Bahrain, which is total number of injuries, I communicate with them about 150. And here in this hospital, it's 200. And there, Oman definitely will cross more than 200 and so on. So we were estimating that it be around 500 to 600 injured.
Police authorities in Khartoum State said in a statement last night that 96 police and 129 armed forces were injured on Thursday. The statement said a group of protesters destroyed water jet vehicles and set fire to trees east of the White Nile Bridge near hotels and a mosque. Police say an unknown number of arrested protesters are facing criminal charges but did not elaborate. A group calling themselves the Emergency Lawyers announced they documented the arrest of 150 demonstrators. The lawyer said the arrested are being held at Soba Prison and Omdurman Women's Prison. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Osman Haider, a member of the resistance committee who participated in yesterday's protest, says Sudanese citizens are demanding an immediate end to military rule and the formation of a democratic civilian-led government.
Yesterday, protest has carried very clear points on falling down of Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the military council, and end up the process of the COP and the establishment of the of a civil authority and democratic system of government in Sudan.
Protesters also called for an investigation into the killings, arbitrary arrest, and disappearance of protesters in previous demonstrations. Haider says pro-democracy protesters will continue to push for an end to military rule in the country through peaceful means.
The Sudanese resistance committees are working to build a political charter that unifies the vision of the Sudanese people. In addition of that, also the working with professional organizations and unions to use strategies such as strikes and the civil disobedience.
The United States Embassy in Khartoum condemned the use of force against the demonstrators and described it as a tragic loss of life. On its official Facebook page, the embassy urged all parties to resume negotiations and called on what it termed peaceful voices to rise above those who advocate or commit violence. It also says the perpetrators must be held accountable. The trilateral mechanism, AU, IGAD, and UNITAMS also condemned the excessive use of force by security forces and expressed their disappointment with Sudanese authorities. In a statement, the group said restricting the internet and mobile phone constitutes a violation of freedom of expression and access to information. The statement called on authorities to end arbitrary arrests and detentions and to respect the right of freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. It went on to say, taking these steps does not mean that Sudan seeks to fulfill its international obligations in the field of human rights, but also ensures a conducive environment for the success of the ongoing political process in Sudan. The protests in Khartoum and other cities marked the third anniversary of the large demonstrations during the uprising that led to the overthrow of longtime ruler Omar al-Bashir and a power-sharing government between civilian groups and the military. That transitional government ended when the military staged a coup in October last year. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Warrap state authorities are condemning this week's killings of more than 30 people by gunmen suspected of having crossed into Warrap from neighboring Unity State. The Warrap State Information Minister says the attack took place in Thorn North County on Wednesday. Dengai Deng has this report for VOA from Bor.
Warrap State Information Minister Ring Deng Ading says a group of armed men who crossed into the area from Unity State killed 30 villagers in a Kopayam of Thorn North County on Wednesday. Ading says the attackers' intent was to raid cattle, but before reaching the cattle camp, they went on a rampage in a swampy area, killing fishermen and women.
The armed youth from Unity State, particularly from Mayom County, attacked the area of Abakopayan, Thorn North County, Warrap State. The attack led to the killing of over 30 people, including women and children.
Ading says attackers from Unity State also killed one person and injured two others on June 21st in the same area. The information minister is urging communities in Thorn not to take the law into their own hands by carrying out revenge attacks in Unity State.
On behalf of Warrap State government, On my own behalf, I condemn this attack in the strongest term possible, and I call on the citizens of Warrap State to remain calm as the two sisterly states' government address this issue of attacks along the borders of two states. Indeed, it is a tragic incident to lose life, and I humbly send my condolences to the brave families of Apungpadot, Lau Poyer, Lon Mawin communities.
Hiding is calling on authorities in Unity State to track down, arrest, and charge the suspected perpetrators with murder.
This would give hope of justice to the affected families and reduce the possibility of a revenge attack. It is our wish that peace prevail along the border of two states. Peace for the two states will greatly contribute to the peace for South Sudan as well.
When South Sudan in Focus reached out to Mayom County Commissioner Chual Gadluak for comment, he said he was in a meeting and couldn't respond over the matter. The Unity State Information Minister David Guy confirms knowledge of the incident, but said he was yet to gather the details about what took place.
But I don't have concrete information about it, but I just heard it randomly like that, that the use of Mayom went and attacked the sister county. Yeah, as we speak, but I'm not yet, as I said, that I'm not yet get concrete information, but I, as well as soon as we'll be going back to them and to get the good information exactly, so that's why maybe you'll be coming back to me later.
Some civil society activists and analysts have attributed the rampant intercommunal fighting in South Sudan to the easy accessibility of guns in most communities and the weak capacity of law enforcement agencies to prevail over ethnic militias. Edmond Yakani, head of the Community Empowerment for Progress organization, told South Sudan in Focus 60 people were killed this past week in intercommunal clashes. A number of activists says the government's inability or refusal to implement findings of committees formed to investigate previous deadly attacks is the reason violence continues unabated in the country. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
A South Sudanese policy analyst says the lack of transparency in the government's handling of a project to dredge rivers in the country highlights hidden interests of certain individuals in the Kiir administration. While ministers and other top officials say they do not know who approved the project or who imported the water dredging equipment, the vice president in charge of the government's economic cluster said this week the decision to dredge River Nam was made back in 2006. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
In recent weeks, many South Sudanese social media users have criticized the government project to dredge River Nam in Unity State. Although some support the initiative, a number of professors, environmental experts, and activists have condemned the initiative, saying it will endanger the environment and wildlife. Many South Sudanese wonder whether the dredging project was a government initiative. On Tuesday, Vice President Jemiswani Iga, who heads the government's economic cluster, said the decision to dredge River Nam and other rivers dates back to a time before South Sudan gained its independence. Iga said at the time the then semi-autonomous government of Southern Sudan signed a memorandum of understanding with the Egyptian government on the project, and dredging equipment was then brought into the country.
You quote me right here. On the 20th of September, the cabinet discussed this issue and we resolved that dredging will have to take place. On the 20th of September, resolution number 39 is struck 2021. You see, now, these are the documents that will tell you more about all these things, and we are continuing more research, my friend.
Iga says the project was initiated in 2006, noting that after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005, the government saw flooding as a threat to the lives of citizens and therefore decided to address the issue. Jock Maduti Jock, a South Sudanese professor of anthropology at Syracuse University in New York, says the government's lack of transparency in communicating with South Sudanese right from the start of the dredging proposal highlights hidden interests of certain individuals, which he says are harmful to the country.
The dredging that is planned has the potential to turn the entire area into a dust bowl in the interest of increasing the flow of water to Egypt. In other words, you are trying to hurt the people of South Sudan in order for people of Egypt to live.
Last month, South Sudan's National Minister for Environment and Forestry, Josephine Nafon, called the dredging project a dangerous initiative. Nafon said her ministry was not aware of any environmental impact assessment that was conducted prior to the initiation of the project. President Salva Kiir's office denied the president approved the project. Presidential spokesman Atene Wek Atene denied any knowledge of the project, saying the government has yet to ascertain from experts the ecological impact of river dredging on the lives of locals who depend on the river for their livelihood. Jok says such mixed messages from different institutions of the same government underscores the government's deep lack of transparency with the dredging project.
There is nothing that should say this government is interested in people, and we want our government to be responsive to our cries. We don't want a government that lies to the public.
Jok says the unclear communications put out by various officials shows the government's disorganization on the dredging project and proves that due diligence was not carried out prior to approving the initiative.
It is not right for such a drastic proposal to be carried out without people making a dialogue around it, to see the goodness of the dredging and the badness of dredging. So then we weigh all the corners. We weigh the pros and cons as a people, collectively, with transparency and honesty from our government and from communities. Let us decide together. Let us not rush to embarking on a major project of this nature without confidence in the consequences of it.
Jok says the government needs to halt the initiative and listen to the South Sudanese people to arrive at a collective decision on whether or not to dredge River Nam. National and state officials confirmed the South Sudan government acquired dredging machine from the Egyptian government to dredge River Nam with the attempts to address issues of flooding. The audio of Vice President James Wani Iga used in this story was recorded by an iRadio journalist. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we hear from small traders as well as business leaders in South Sudan about how the economy is doing. Stay tuned for that story right after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. 11 years after its independence, the economy of South Sudan reflects two different realities. While some in the oil, real estate, and luxury sectors like interior design thrive, more vendors selling everyday items like food and clothes wallow in poverty. South Sudan in Focus managing editor John Tanza in Juba spoke to a few of those vendors.
Custom Market in Juba Town is one of the oldest markets in South Sudan. Vendors from Uganda, Kenya, and the Democratic Republic of Congo come here to tout their goods, ranging from clothing to car spare parts. Most traders say they earn little profit because prices at wholesale stores are too high. Achuila Chol sells cell phones and is one of them.
There's no money. I'm just here to hustling anything I get.
Trader Nadia Stella Alemin Durufu says she faces challenges from many fronts.
The price of everything have been increased in the market there, but we are still selling in the same price. Because if we increase our price, the customers will not buy the thing.
For many small-scale vendors like shoe salesman Moses Charles, business was good before 2013 and 2016 political crisis in the country. He says the effects of the conflict hurt the economy.
Before we used to buy things cheaper, but now the prices have increased. From the wholesale, a shoe for 3,000 and a half has now increased to 4,800 Sudanese pounds. We don't get clients who can afford these prices.
For other South Sudanese, business is booming. Lawrence Kurbandi is a former legal advisor to President Salva Kiir and is now a real estate investor in the country.
Juba and other towns of South Sudan, you can invest in them, provide that you select your own choice as investor, be you local or national investor or international investors. As soon as we signed the agreement, people who came here, they are not necessarily investors, they are traders.
Kurbandi says investors or traders should look for new opportunities in the country. He says some South Sudanese who have money are seeking better services from investors.
In situations like ours, there are three types of investment. Investing in education, because every household would like their children to go to best schools. The other investment is the health. People never stop being sick in countries like ours. So if you invest in good hospitals, you will still make money. And the third one is the food commodity.
South Sudanese businessman Cho Lam, a senior partner at the local South Sudanese company, Chiang Wei CW, says the oil sector has business opportunities.
The economy of South Sudan focuses on the crude sales. But in terms of the services, there's a huge revenue stream within the oil services. I would say equal to the oil that's being sold in terms of the crude. The oil services is dominated, I would say, by the Chinese, the majority in the oil sector, in the services. And the budget for oil services, I would assume, it's something close to $1.5 to $2 billion annually.
Another business sector that appears to be thriving despite the tough economic climate is interior design. APA Interiors is the only one-stop interior design shop for locals and expatriates in Juba. Apajok Aler, who studied interior architecture in Italy, has found her niche in Juba. She is the director of APA Interiors.
Our business, it's going well. We have a lot of clients. There was a missing gap, and we were that link that we needed to be in. There were a few challenges, obviously. Setting up a business from the start is always hard. And also making people understand the need for interior design.
Despite the tough economy, South Sudanese are making ends meet whichever way they can, like this University of Juba student who operates a local motorbike taxi, also known as Boda Boda.
I'm currently upgrading to degree, so with no one to sponsor me, to support me, and with no proper job, that's when I decided to create for myself a business, at least to facilitate my studies and even support my family.
Mohamed Sani is a Nigerian national who has been importing his country's fabrics into South Sudan for 21 years.
South Sudan, they need people to come here. So if you come here just for work, they are welcome with you. But if you come, you want to work to get money, it's good. There is no any challenges here in South Sudan.
According to the World Bank latest South Sudan Economic Monitor, the improving microeconomic conditions and relative peace has supported a rebound of growth in services and trade. South Sudan's economy grew by 1.2% in 2021-2022. John Tanza, VOA News, Juba.
We'd love to hear your comments on our coverage of events in South Sudan. Here are some listener comments we gathered this week. Many of you weighed in this week about our coverage of the deadly attack in Tony North County of Warap State, such as Mading Maliwalal Wong from Malakal Town, who writes, "The killing of SSPDF soldiers by armed youth in Tony is annoying and shocking news to all South Sudanese. We should respect our brave troops who liberated this country. The world at large used to respect our troops because they were seriously fearless fighters. They sacrificed their lives for this country and indeed fought until they won the battle. But now they are betrayed by our leaders." Isaac Long from Rumbek in Lakestead says, "Hello, VOA. What happened in Tony North County of Warab State is something very bad. It should not have occurred, and this is due to possession of firearms by civilians. There is a need for the national government to graduate the unified forces and carry out a comprehensive disarmament exercise in time across the country despite the challenges. May those who lost their lives in the fight rest in peace." Sabar Isa Khamis of Yambio in Western Equatoria State says, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Surely South Sudan is highly militarized because a full barracks can be overrun by armed civilians like what happened in Tony North County. The government must be disaster prepared to face serious insecurity if they want to stick to the idea of holding elections next year. It will be totally a blood vote, not free, fair, and credible elections. Condolences to the families. May the souls of both civilians and soldiers died rest in eternal peace." Jacob Jorma Trang from Yorli Lake State says, "The continuous conflict between Warapi State and Abyei Administrative Area doesn't need to be given deaf ears anymore by the authorities. It's becoming insecurity for all. What happened in Tony last week was a disaster. Arms are finishing our people, and that is why we always call for regional disarmament to save lives. May the souls of those who perished rest in peace." Daniel Dudagbai from Rakmajok in Lake State says, "Hello, VOA. No one is above the law of any given state. The virgin governance of Honorable Governor Aleu Anyeng is impregnated by armed civilians in Warap State. This needs a national government intervention to form a committee to investigate the root causes of the communal violence in Warap, and if any government official is found to be one triggering this barbaric act, then the law has to take its due course, regardless of the status of the person or the position he or she holds." Rakwath Manong Chuang Kjek from Juba POC 1 says, "Hello, Nabil and John Tanza. The call made by the UN Special Representative in South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, for the speedy implementation of security arrangements, graduation of unified armies, transportation of IDPs back to their original homes, transportation of refugees back home, and counting the number of citizens nationwide is what we need as concerned citizens. If there is failure to do that, then I hope there will be no general election in 2023. My appeal to President Salva Kiir is to have the political will to implement the axis." Martin Manjil Wugol in Uganda writes, "Hi, Nabil and John. Kindly extend my heartfelt condolences to the family of the late Honorable Minister of Water and Irrigation Manawa Peter and the late Engineer Paul Adong Bith, who died in Dubai. It was a major loss to the country and to the immediate families of the fallen comrades. May Almighty God put their souls in eternal peace. Amen." The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate you sharing your opinions with us. Keep those comments coming. Remember to keep your comments brief, and we shall sample them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. And that's all we prepared for you this Friday. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, cars, and on your phones. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Basi ujiwe mzungu wa nne, nikiuliza kwa nini anasema amenipa. mwenzenu naosha vyombo, mwenzenu napiga deki, mzee mzima napika, jamani nafua nguo, sio kama napenda, na lazimishwa mimi.